You're listening to episode 6 of 88 Cups of Tea with Yin Chang.
Am I doing this right? Hi, I'm your host, Yin Chang, and thanks for joining me on 88 Cups of Tea. This podcast is created to leave you feeling motivated from interviews with storytellers, where we learn how they create opportunities for a successful career without losing sight of the values that make us human. Whew, that was a really long run-on sentence.
Hello, my fellow storytellers. Before we get right into this interview, I'd love to thank Scrivener for sponsoring today's episode. Scrivener is a tool that helps writers bring their stories to life. I use Scrivener to gather all my thoughts, ideas, and research in an organized way that makes writing the chapters so much easier for me. Stay tuned for a featured interview with Julia Pierce, the head of marketing at Scrivener, at the end of this episode to find out why she uses Scrivener, the one feature she absolutely loves, and the very special promo code just for our tribe of storytellers. Hey guys, guess who I have with us today? I have Juliet Fay, who wrote Shelter Me. That was her first book. Juliet, thank you so much for being here with us today. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for inviting me on the show.
Oh, I'm so happy to have you. Tell us a little bit about how you got into writing.
I've always been somebody who has always loved books. I've always been a voracious reader. Never really thought about being a writer, but I've always had stories going in my head. Since I was a child, I've always sort of made up stories in my head, and sometimes they were long and involved and sometimes very short, but I finally was really inspired to start writing some of my own when one day a friend, she was getting rid of some books and she handed off a book to me and said, here, you're going on vacation. This is a beach read, you know, just take it with you. And I read the book and it was the worst book I've ever read. Just terrible. And I couldn't put it down because I was fascinated by its badness. The dialogue made no sense. And I would like yell at the book, like that would never happen. And people don't talk like that. But what was interesting to me was I was interested in the premise of the book, and it starts out with two people trapped in an elevator. And I thought, well, who would I put in that elevator? Which is like a little game that I play with myself. And I started thinking up this whole entire story about these two people who meet when they're trapped in an elevator. And I decided to start writing it down. Felt like I was falling in love with writing. And I couldn't wait to get back to my characters. And I get up early and I'd go to bed late and I'd think about them all the time. And my kids were really little at that time. I think the youngest was about 2. So, you know, I didn't have a lot of time for myself, but I took every minute I could to write out that first story. And then I was hooked.
So you didn't go to school for writing then?
I didn't. I wasn't an English major. I don't have a master's in creative writing. You know, I've always been somebody who did a lot of writing in my jobs, but not so much creative writing. I think just all the reading that I did. I also wrote a journal all throughout my teens and early 20s. And when I speak to high school kids, and I do a lot, I say to them, you know, the journal is the best way for you to find your own voice without anybody looking over your shoulder, anybody correcting you or telling you they can't visualize the setting. It's a great way to learn to please yourself. And I always tell high schoolers, the best thing about writing a journal is you can lie, you know? You can make the story funnier, you can make it sadder, you can make yourself the hero or the villain. You can write it however you want to write it. And I think it was all those years of journaling that really helped me to find my own voice and learn to please myself, which I think every writer needs to learn to do first.
I love that. How do you create your characters and what inspired you to dive into those characters?
Pretty much every time I've sat down to write a novel, it's usually been sort of a subject matter or a theme that's something I've been thinking about for a while. When you write a novel, you have to live with an idea, one basic idea, for a long time. It takes me usually about a year to write and then another 6 months to revise. So you really got to live with that theme for a long time. In Shelter Me, the main character has just lost her husband. She's a young woman. Her husband died suddenly in an accident. And she's sort of raggedly putting the pieces of her life back together. And she's just really angry and bitter and not pleasant to be around. The idea came to me over years when I met my husband and fell in love with him. You know, I had been in love with him before, but I'm a very self-sufficient person. I'm pretty independent. When I fell in love with my husband, it was like, wow, I'm so attached to this person. And then we got engaged, we got married, started having kids. As time went on, I realized how completely and utterly broken I would feel if I lost him. And I thought a lot about the fact that I would probably be pretty miserable to be around. I would be unpleasant. unpleasant. I would be angry. I would probably be just a big hot mess. So Janie is really kind of a mess in the beginning. She's not pleasant. She gets angry very easily. She flips out a lot, but it's mostly because she's just dealing with all this grief and anger that she's lost her husband at such a young age and how much she's missing him. In some ways, I think, you know, that book was a little bit therapy to me. You know, I always joke that since it happened to Janie, the main character, it couldn't possibly happen to me now because I've already given that tragedy to someone else. And so far, my husband's healthy and alive. You know, with each book, I sort of have a sentence or a phrase that I think about that really keeps me on track. And with Shelter Me, it was unexpected sources of support. You'd never know who's going to be there for you when the mud hits the fan. And in fact, that's sort of the story, is that the people that she thinks should and will be there for her aren't. It's really people that she does not feel terribly connected to at the beginning of the story who sort of show up for her in unexpected ways. So that's how I came up with the idea for that one. You know, for other books, it's been other sort of themes or ideas. But I generally start with the idea, and then I think about what characters can best tell the story. It doesn't usually come with the character first. It comes with the idea first.
Oh, that's cool. So you work with plot first. And do you work backwards in a way where I've heard authors start from the ending, like their actual writing process? So like they know how the story is going to end. They know what the character is going to end up doing. Then plot it backwards to kind of untwist everything, unravel everything backwards. Do you kind of work in a similar way, or do you start at the very beginning of the plot?
I really start at the beginning. I feel like for me, we always joke that there are two kinds of writers, plotters and pantsers. Plotters plot everything out and pantsers fly by the seat of their pants. And I'm kind of in the middle. And it's been actually different with different books. But by and large, I sort of know the story I want to tell. I have the landmarks. I know generally what I want to happen to the main character by the end, but I don't know the details. I sort of think about who the characters will be in the book, but sometimes I get surprised. And to me, that's the fun of it, is that I sit down to write and I say, okay, we got to get her from point A to point B today, but I'm not quite sure how we're going to get there. The surprise of sort of finding out what's going to happen, as crazy as that seems, is really kind of fun for me. And I've had characters who I thought would just be little peripheral characters sort of keep showing up. And I think, oh, I didn't really think that you were going to be around too much. Here you are. So Shelley, the neighbor in Shelter Me, I had no plans for her whatsoever. And she just kept showing up. Like I say, I'm sort of in the middle. And I really do go from the beginning to the middle, because I sort of feel like I'm figuring out the story as I go along. Not the big signposts, but the trip in between picking characters. And that's fun.
I like that. I feel like your endings are very realistic. It's very honest and reflects real life.
Thank you so much. I have to say that really means a lot to me. Authenticity is, to me, the most important thing somebody could say. Yeah, that felt real, you know.
For you to be in that headspace, and I know you mentioned it's like about a year and a half. How is it for you to be in her headspace for that long?
Well, I'll tell you, first of all, I think it's important for readers to know, in case you want to read the book, you probably won't fall into a deep depression, because one of the things about Janie, and I think this is a redeeming quality for her, she has a wicked sense of humor. So even while she's so bitter and angry, she's very funny. And she's got this sarcastic humor. She's sort of thinking things to herself that mostly she doesn't say out loud, but sometimes she does and gets in trouble. I think one of the things that's important to me in all my books is that whatever these characters are facing, life, as hard as it can be, is also really funny. So all of my books, I try to aim for some amount of levity, not unrealistic or not just to keep people from feeling deep feelings, but there's a seesaw back and forth between a hard scene and a funny scene or that kind of thing. I have to say that one of the things that I watch for when I write is my own reaction. Sometimes I write a sad scene and I cry and I think, oh, okay, well, then I must have done something right, because I'm feeling the emotion and I'm creating it. So this is not a surprise to me. Or if I laugh out loud about something, I'm like, okay, good. You know, I do feel it. And yet while I'm writing, I'm in it and I'm there and I'm with that character. And I love all of my characters, even the ones that are not so nice, because I know them. Nobody's just plain old evil. There is a reason why people are the way they are. So I feel like even if the book, it's not really clear in the book what the backstory is, I know the backstory for all my characters. So I care about them. But then, you know, I have this whole other life with my family and my kids, my husband and my friends. You know, I leave the writing behind. When I'm in it, I'm in it. And that's one of the reasons that I really only write when the kids are at school, because I need to be alone. I need to be able to sort of feel the feelings and not be distracted by somebody saying, can you drive me to my friend's house? Or he hit me, or where's my... I like to be alone in a quiet house so I dream up my story and feel the feelings of all the characters. I felt Janie was funny enough that she wasn't hard for me to be with. I would be friends with her. I would be friends with all my characters. Well, certainly the main characters of each of my books. As messy and as many faults as they may have, they're people that I really admire ultimately.
They're human. That's what's so admirable about those characters, is that they're not beating around the bush. They're not trying to be something else.
Right.
And you have to admire that.
The action follows one character throughout the book. You're able to sort of zoom into their thought level, but also to zoom back out and be able to sort of see them in their environment. And so I think what makes that a really honest experience is that you are seeing them from the inside. So maybe the way they present themselves, you'd be like, I might like or not like that person. But the way that you can get close to the character is because you're sort of in their head a little bit and you can see what they're really feeling and thinking. Close third is my favorite point of view as a writer.
From your first, second, and third books, you've written solely at home?
Not always. The things that I've been able to do, I've been really lucky to do, is every, I would say, 3 months, I go away. Usually for about 2 nights, I check into a hotel or I go on a writing retreat or that kind of thing, so that there's no one with me for 48 hours. I am completely alone. Sometimes I go with my writing group and then we'll be alone all day and then we'll all have dinner together and then go back to our rooms and write some more and go to bed. I find that I often don't get enough time to write. And so it's really nice every couple of months to be able to go somewhere, stay at somebody's house that's left, and just be alone and write for 48 hours.
And in those 48 hours, how much do you knock out?
Sometimes I would say somewhere between 5,000 and 8,000 words, which is a lot. I mean, that's...
Yeah, I was going to say, whoa,
yeah,
that's a lot.
Yeah. When I write, you know, when I'm home, I try to write 1,000 words in a day. And that sometimes is 2 hours, sometimes is 5 hours. But I generally don't get more time than that in a day to write. And so if I hit 1,000 words, I am very happy with myself. And if I go further, I'm even more happy. But to be able to go away for a couple of days and write 6,000 words, I feel like a rock star in my own mind, you know?
That's really cool to hear. Because for me, as a budding writer, I feel guilty because I know there's a lot of other things I'm focusing on as well. And it makes me feel like, oh gosh, is there something off with me that I can't sit down and focus and bang out 1,000 words in one day, every single day, or like 500 words. So to hear you say, hey, sometimes I just take off and 48 hours, I just bang this out and you're good to go. That's inspiring.
And some days, it's, you know, 300 words. You know, I mean, we all have ups and downs. And I think the more that you do it, like anything, the more you practice, the faster you get, the more efficient you are with your time. And you tend to go less down sort of rabbit holes and that aren't going to be productive. I also think, honestly, because I started as a writer with so little time, I used to always sort of crack up over writers who had like these rituals that, you know, they would light a certain incense and they would have music and had to have certain things. I'd be like, I throw a load of laundry in and I get to work because I don't have much time. I have to get there and do it. You know, sort of being on the front lines like that really helped me to get in the zone fast. But it's just about practice. Really, in the beginning, I wasn't as fast, you know, as I am now.
When you write your first draft, do you bang it out and you don't allow yourself to make edits? How's your process with the first draft?
The first draft, I do edit as I go. I often will sort of circle back and look at what I wrote yesterday or last week and work on that because I just feel like it puts me in a good headspace to continue writing. I know authors who just bare bones it for first draft and then go in and fill in. That doesn't feel right to me, but it's just it's a personal thing. It's not like I end up with a first draft that's like a fifth draft, but it's a first draft that's more like a third draft. But then many, many revisions later, God is in the details. You know, you just keep going back and honing. And it's so funny. One of the best things that writers can do is finish a piece and you put it away for a week or more, the longer the better. And then you go back and look at it with fresh eyes. You can see so much of what you want to fix and what you want to improve and what's working and what's not. And then you put it away again for a couple of weeks and you go back. I can't tell you how many times I thought, this is it. This is the final draft. I am done. This is just what I meant to do. And then I put it away. And then I look at it a couple of weeks later and I think, oh, well, I could have done that. You know, I mean, of course you can spend the rest of your life making improvements until it's down to a sentence or something. I don't know. I do feel like there's always more work that can be done. If you give yourself time to get fresh eyes on it, then that's a huge help.
Okay. I love that. You know, when you mentioned about the writing retreat, is there anything that you can share, advise our listeners with, kind of let them know like what's worked for you to provide you inspiration in your work?
Sure. I mean, I think there've been plenty of life events that have been inspired things for me. But I think as a writer, probably one of the best things for me has been being part of a writing group that I really trust. It's pretty small. It's like 5 people, but we've been together for a number of years now, and we really get each other. We really trust each other so that we can be really honest with each other, but we're also kind. Some writing groups can really be about tearing people apart, and some writing groups are like everybody wants to be nice. And I've had other writing groups that were good for a while, but didn't quite meet my needs. But I do think there's just a huge benefit to having other people look at your work, people who are writers look at your work. And I have a couple of non-writers that look at my work too, and I really appreciate their perspectives. And it's a different conversation. It's more about, well, I wanted the character to do this, or, you know, that kind of thing. With the writers, it's more tactical, but really useful. So I guess my biggest piece of advice is find a group of writers that fits for you, that are doing similar kinds of work. Doesn't all have to be the same, but if you're a writer who's writing contemporary fiction, you're working with other writers who are doing nonfiction, that's a very different kind of writing. So it's people that are doing a sort of similar kind of work that you can trust each other. That, I think, has been hugely helpful.
How did you find yours, though?
I found this writing group because I went to a writing class. There's a writing organization in Boston called Grub Street, which I highly recommend. And I went to a class, met a couple of people, and I contacted one of them and said, hey, you know, like, let's get together kind of thing. And then she sort of connected me in with some of the other people that one or two of whom was in the class, and, you know, a couple of others who weren't. It's a little bit like dating, I think. I think writing classes are a great way to meet people because you can sort of see what they're about without really committing, sort of like going on a group date. And then when you say, okay, kind of like you, do you like me? And then do you have another writing friend that we can pull in? I think you don't want it too big, 3 at a minimum, and maybe 5 or 6 at a maximum, because you want time to read each other's work. First of all, I think taking writing classes is a great thing to do anyway. And that's a great way to meet people. And even small cities have some kind of adult education writing classes.
Love it. That's super helpful. What are some tips that perhaps mentors or writers that you looked up to, what's the best advice that they gave you that you can pass to us?
I think that these days there's so many people who, you know, you're trying to get published and maybe you want to go into traditional publishing. Or there's so many ways for other people to have a say in what you do. But I think that the most successful writing really comes from you and comes from what you love. I guess I would say that the most important thing is for you to please yourself, that you are proud of what you're producing, whether or not you get some big writing contract or not. It's really got to be something that pleases you. If writing is a chore, or if you're writing things that you're just trying to be commercial, it's just not as fun. And the fact of the matter is, publishing industry is tough. You may not get a writing contract. So I would say my best advice is write for yourself. Write because you love to write. Write stuff that you want to go back and look at later, that you feel proud of, because that's really what the joy of writing should be.
Can you share your journey on how you got your literary agent and how you got published?
So my first agent, I've had a couple of agents now. I finished my first book, which never got published, by the way. That was a bad way to start the story. Pretend I didn't say that. So I wrote this fantastic book. It was my first book. And I called a friend who lived in New York and I said, do you know anybody? And I sent out a lot of feelers for, does anybody know anybody? And then I also did research of trying to find a literary agent. And through this friend of mine in New York who had a neighbor who was in publishing, and she was sort of took me on as a project, she helped me eventually find an agent. Unfortunately, the agent, I think maybe he did it as a favor. I don't really know. Honestly, I don't know why he took me on. I never met him. I never even talked to him on the phone. So there's your first tip that this is not going well. I kept saying, shouldn't I come to New York and meet you? He said, oh no, that's okay. This is all by email. And he very quickly sort of handed me off to his associate, whom I Googled, of course, because we Google everyone, and found out that she was a 24-year-old. She had just gotten out of a master's degree herself, so she was young, and she was into grunge poetry. And I thought, wow, I'm not really sure what grunge poetry is, but I'm pretty sure I don't write it. So how's this going to go? And she was actually, it was so funny. Like once a month, I would sort of write to her and say, like, how's it going with selling my book? And she would be like, don't bother me. I'll call you when there's, it was awful. It was horrible. But I felt like, oh my gosh, I'm so lucky to have an agent. I can't complain. And she would say, okay, I'm going to send out your book to another publisher. print it out for me and send it to me in New York. So I would print it out on my printer and then I would spend like $50 overnighting it to her. Like, oh, it's just crazy. So they sent it out, I think, to 5 publishers, which is very small. It's a very small number. And then decided that they couldn't sell it. And so they sent me a registered letter to tell me, couldn't pick up the phone, to just call and say, hey, it's not working out. They sent me a registered letter to say, we're no longer representing you.
Wow.
And it's so that book actually never got published. And it's funny because I went back and looked at it later to sort of, all the time that I had been looking for an agent and waiting for them to sell this first book, I had been writing Shelter Me. I knew that it was a better product. I just knew it was better. I feel like that first book was my practice novel. I can't tell you how many authors have what we call a book in the drawer, which is a book that never got published. It's never going to see the light of day. It wasn't very good. So then I said, the heck with that first book, I'm going to go out and try and find an agent with Shelter Me. And, so I was much luckier with that. And I did get an agent and I actually met her. Of course I met her. You have to meet your agent. It's crazy. It's like marrying somebody you've never met before. You know, it's just insane. You know, this is how desperate you get. That's my first agent horror story. But it all worked out. I can't complain too much. At the time, it was pretty awful. But you know.
For the second one that worked out, thank goodness, the legitimate one. Well, with hers, so you sent out a query letter, yes?
Well, actually, this is kind of a funny story. I have a friend in the town that I live in, and I was like so devastated by this whole first agent experience. And I said, you know, your sister works in publishing, right? You know, would she ever talk to me? And she wasn't an agent or anything. And my friend said, I don't think so. She's very busy. I don't think so. And I was like, oh, okay. And then the next time I saw this friend, she said, well, I talked to my sister and she'll talk to you, but you know, she's very busy. So I don't know how much time she'll have for you. And I said, okay. And you know, I tried to really prepare myself to only have like 5 minutes on the phone with her and to like really make the most of it. She got on the phone with me and she couldn't have been nicer. She was awesome. She listened to the whole story and whatever. And then she said in the middle of the call, she said, oh, I have a call coming in. I'm so sorry. And I said, well, that's okay. And I thought, well, I thought I was only going to get 5 minutes with her anyway. So she said, oh, I feel terrible, but I really need to take this. It's Khaled Hosseini.
Wow.
Kite Runner, A Thousand Splendid Suns.
Yes, my jaw is dropped right now. I'm like, ah!
She was his publicist and she said, and I was like, oh my God, take the call. Like, why are you still talking to me? You know? So she said, I'll call you right back. And she did. And she was like, oh, I felt terrible about that. I was like, please, you know how cool it is to be interrupted by that guy? So she said, I do have one friend who I think would like your story. And her name is Teresa Park. I said, can I use your name? And she said, yes. So I sent Teresa an email query letter and she responded in 5 minutes, which they never do. They never, but this was her friend who was sort of recommending me. So she said, yeah, send it to me. Send me the first 50 pages, which is a common, you know, they often want to see just the first couple of chapters, whatever. So I sent it. And the next day she emailed me again and she said, I'm really enjoying this. Please send me the rest of it. I sent it to her and I assumed it would be months before I heard from her again, because agents take a long time often. They get inundated with so many novels. A week later, I get a phone call. I have 4 kids and they all had friends over that day. So the house was just teeming with children and I was about to pick somebody up. The place was crazy. It was a Friday afternoon. And I come back and one of my kids has scrawled on a scrap of paper, Teresa Park called. And I was like, wait, she called on the phone to my house? Like, what? And I was like, oh my God. So I gathered all the kids up and I said, listen, I have a really important phone call to make. I'm going to go into this room over here and I don't want anybody to bother me. So anybody who has kids knows what that means to a child. It means please bother me as much as humanly possible. So I go in this room, I close the door and kids keep coming in. Like, he hit me. Can we have popsicles? And I'm like, oh my God, you know, and I'm snapping at them and I'm still talking like, oh, thank you so much. And I'm snapping at them and like waving them out of the room. Finally, somebody came in crying and I said, excuse me, just a minute. And I turned to him and I said, go watch TV. They turned on the TV and I having this amazing conversation with this agent who's, you know, quoting to me from my novel. And she definitely, you know, she wanted to get together with me. And I was like, oh my God. So after the phone call, I was just walking on air and I walked into the room where the kids were all watching TV. And my youngest, who was 4 at the time, wasn't looking at the TV screen. He was looked kind of foggy. And I said, what's going on with you? He said, my eyes hurt. And I put my hand on his forehead and he was burning up. He had a fever. And I'm snapping at him like, leave me alone. I think I might finally have a career here, you know. So I felt terrible. Proud parenting moment.
Isn't that funny? It's always in those moments. These good calls come when you least expect it and when there's a lot of chaos happening right. in our lives. You know, it's so crazy. How important do you think it is for a writer's career to nurse relationships or to network?
You know, the publishing industry is tough. Now, a lot of people are self-publishing these days, but it's a lot harder to get promotion and to sort of get into bookstores and that kind of thing. So I think it still is generally considered better to try and be traditionally published just in terms of how much your book can be promoted and that kind of thing. Although people have different opinions on that. Certainly, I think there's a lot of luck involved. As with many things in life, you've got to have a good product. I felt good about Shelter Me, but then you also have to have some luck. And I felt like I had some really good luck. But luck comes for those who put themselves in luck's way. You also have to be willing to say, I'm just going to keep making phone calls and I'm going to just keep trying. And, you know, I do believe that I sort of dropped into her life, my second agent, at a time when she was ready to represent a new person. She hadn't picked up a new writer in a long time. And I think she was ready. Maybe if I had written to her 2 months before or 2 months after, she would have said, no, I'm full. To some degree, we make our own luck. And the more that you can put yourself out there, not in a pushy way, not in a, you know, demanding way, but in a good-natured way for life in general, that's good advice.
What are some small manageable steps that you can tell our writers to take that can help forward them in their writing careers?
Sure. So one of the big pieces of advice you hear all the time is you must write every day. And, you know, for me as a young mother, I couldn't write every day. I had crazy kids running around. I had my hands full most of the time. But as my kids got a little bit older, I really tried to not write every day, you know, sort of interact with the story every day. And so maybe that just meant taking 20 minutes to sort of review what I wrote yesterday, or maybe it just meant writing a paragraph. But one of the things that I found there was a huge increase in efficiency for me because, first of all, you're sort of keeping your characters fresh in your mind. I think a lot of the work that the writer does is sort of subconscious. You're walking around, you're picking up little tidbits of information or, you know, a visual over here or a sound over here or a smell over here, or a piece of conversation over here. And your subconscious is sort of braiding that in with your story. And if you go too long without looking at your story, then your brain sort of starts leaving it alone and stops doing all that sort of work, behind the scenes work that it's doing. So even if you can take 15 minutes to just open the file and just look at what you wrote yesterday, and that's all you can do, fine. You know, I often find if I sit down and I say, look, I only have a short time, I'm just going to write a paragraph. I write three, and then just little chunks can get you pretty far. While I'm very sympathetic to people who don't have a lot of time, I certainly didn't have a lot of time when I first started writing, just trying to touch the story, interact with it in some small way every day, I think really is useful.
What are some personal habits that you think have really contributed to your success?
I do like to exercise, and you know, there's all kinds of ways of keeping your life in balance that I think makes you a better writer. But I also think that one of the biggest problems that writers often have is we sort of feel the critic, we feel the readers while we're trying to write. And I think it's really important for writers to get the critics and the agents and the editors and the readers and your Aunt Flo and your high school boyfriend and whoever you think is looking over your shoulder out of your head and just write for you and be kind to yourself. Don't write so that you're worried that you're impressing people. Just write for you and enjoy yourself.
I really love to hone in on balancing priorities, surrounding yourself with loved ones and not tarnishing those important relationships. So you have four kids and you have a husband. You sound like you have such an active, fun family. How do you juggle that? Can you give us some tips on how you're a superwoman and how you do it?
Oh my gosh. Now, I am not a superwoman, I'll tell you that. You know, I think that for me, I see writing as a job, and I'm a working mom, just like any working mom. I'm very fortunate in that I have a lot of flexibility. I'm my own boss. So if I want to take the day off and go on the field trip with the kids, that's what I do. But I do think that everybody, no matter what kind of life you're leading, everyone strives for balance. And it's a hard thing to find. I think it's something that you have to sort of constantly be on the lookout for. Am I paying enough attention to my family? Am I paying enough attention to my friends? Do I, you know, have I called my mother recently? Have I, you know, that kind of thing. But also, now's my time to work. I think it's important for kids to see that their parents have something going on outside of just being a parent. I'll say to my kids, no, I can't help you with that right now. I've got to get some work done. And they don't like it, but I'm pretty available for them. So I don't worry too much about it. I'm not worried that they're being neglected. So I think it's just as important to say, no, work comes first right now. Even doing this interview, you know, two of them are out there fighting over, I can hear them out there fighting over the some video or something. And I'm like, well, I'm doing an interview right now. You know, I'm not going to go out there and break up a fight. You guys are going to have to figure it out. And I think that's important too.
How do you make time for you and your husband with your writing career and four kids? Do you have a set date night, like, you know, that you can advise our listeners who are perhaps in a married relationship with kids? How do you do it?
We don't really have a set date night. We sort of try to find time for each other here and there, I would say. We, you know, we'll go away for a weekend alone, a couple of nights a year, a couple of weekends a year. I think one of the things I see couples doing that I think isn't always the best thing is not going to bed at the same time. Like Tom and I will get into bed and then we'll talk. And, hey, what happened to you today? What, you know, because sometimes you didn't get a chance to talk all day because of work and the kids. And that sort of time to catch up and strategize about this kid needs that or just sort of learn a little bit more about what went on in their day. For me, having a date night is not as important as sort of that daily connection of having some time to talk. We usually talk once or twice during the day. And, you know, he really is my best friend. So I want to talk to him. I want to say, oh, my God, you can't believe what so-and-so said or, you know, some this funny thing or, oh, my gosh, I'm really worried about that. He's the person I want to tell first. So aww. I think, I know, it's kind of gooey.
I love it. I'm totally smiling. Oh, my goodness. That's super sweet. I love hearing that. So what is a favorite book that you have that you either grew up with and it really influenced you as a writer, or it's something that you picked up in the beginning of your writing career that has helped you along the way?
Well, one of my favorite books growing up was The Boxcar Children. That was one of my favorite series. And I love their self-sufficiency. They were able to really sort of take care of each other and have adventures and without a lot of parents around. I was sort of fascinated by that. In terms of writing books, I think the best one out there is Stephen King's On Writing. Annie Lamott's Bird by Bird is a great one.
Juliet, thank you so much for being so generous with your time and all your advice and tips and sharing your journey with us. It was so motivating, so inspiring. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Really fun to chat with you, Ian.
Hey, Storyteller Tribe. Thank you so much for joining me today. How amazing were Juliet's tips and advice for writing your novel and also for time management? I hope our episode gave you a ton of inspiration for your next writing session. Please head over and say hello to Juliet on Twitter at Juliet Fay or on Facebook at facebook.com/JulietFayAuthor. For links to all of the books and resources that were brought up in Juliet's episode, head over to her show notes page at 88cupsofTea.com/podcast/JulietFay. As mentioned at the top of this episode, I'd love for you to get to know the team behind Scrivener. We have Julia Pierce, the head of marketing, with us today to talk a little bit about Scrivener. Julia, I'm so happy to have you on the show right now. I'm such a huge fan of Scrivener. Funny thing is, I actually learned about you guys through one of my guests I interviewed for the show. She's a best-selling novelist of an Oprah's Editor's Pick and an O. Henry Prize winner. So yeah, you better believe that I most definitely checked out the software she uses for her writing. I'm so grateful to her for mentioning you guys, and I'm so thrilled to have you as an official sponsor of 88 Cups of Tea. So let's get right into it. Tell me how Scrivener has helped you with your work, and what do you love about it?
The idea behind Scrivener is that it was developed for writers. My background's in journalism, so it's really, really helped me. For instance, when you're writing a feature, you might have different sources, you might have different interviews with different people. The beauty of Scrivener is that it allows you to get everything into one place. So beforehand, you might have had a few files in Microsoft Word, you might have had some stuff on a spreadsheet in Excel, and you're sort of thinking to yourself, oh, I know I made some notes about this, and I know I spoke to this person, but what did I call that file? I'm searching through my computer, I can't find anything. But with Scrivener, you can drag it all into one folder. Everything's in one place at your fingertips. So whenever you're looking for something, you can just do it straight away. And you can pull in things like videos, you can pull in audio files as well. So it's a very, very flexible tool. A lot of writing software is built with a particular style in mind or going through a particular process. You may have to fill in character sheets and so on before you can actually get into the software itself and start writing. We don't believe in that at all. What we think is that everybody writes, all writers are completely different. They have their own individual styles and ways of doing things. So the idea behind Scrivener is that Scrivener doesn't get in the way. It molds to your style. You think about how you would like to write, whether you like to plan everything first or whether you like to just sit there and write everything and then at the end go, now I need to organize everything. Now I need to go back and edit and think, did I say Steve had blue eyes at the beginning and now he's a tall man with dark eyes. And I'm sure everybody who's listening who's an author knows, oh yeah, continuity. We have all these things within the program. You just mold it to whatever you need to do, really.
Yeah, that's what I love about Scrivener too. I actually jumped into your software thinking it was just for people who wanted to write books, but I realized a few days into that, it's so perfect for any kind of writing, any kind of research and organization. It's actually perfect, especially for someone like me who's so scatterbrained with all these ideas and thoughts I need to collect and jot down. And you guys have made my life so much easier because I used to get so annoyed having to switch back and forth between all of my documents that were stacked on top of each other one by one at the very bottom of my desktop screen. So then you'd have to kind of like skim through and look through and keep clicking all these buttons. So I would always lose my train of thought because I was so busy trying to find all these hidden images and PDFs and Word documents. So just a few days into using Scrivener, I realized really quickly that not only can I use it for a more organized way of getting ideas down for a novel, but I've also used it to create the content for my podcast's website and setting up contracts and even business emails. I feel like every time I use Scrivener, I always discover brand new features and I'm like, whoa, where did that one come from? I'm sure there's a lot more features that I'm not aware of yet. So why don't you tell us about one of your absolute favorite features on Scrivener?
Actually, the one feature that I really do like is when you go into the corkboard and you can stamp each individual card with a message sort of like done, needs editing, final draft, something like that. I just find it really, really easy to go back through chapters of things that I'm writing and just to quickly flick onto corkboard view and just see, actually, no, I've done that. It's nice to be able to see your progress as you go through and just mark that done, done, done. It's just the way my mind's organized.
Yeah, definitely just go for it. I actually went through the Active tutorial myself and it really helped a lot in figuring out how to use Scrivener because it can be overwhelming in the beginning. And I'll also have to jump on the video tutorials because that sounds really helpful too. So thank you so much for sharing your take on Scrivener, Julia. And that wraps it up, guys. As you can see, I'm so proud to partner with Scrivener as I really do believe in them. And if you haven't use them yet, I really encourage you to download their free trial and check it out for yourself. I want this tool to help you as much as it's helped me. So if you decide that you do love it, Scrivener has a very special offer just for our storyteller tribe. Head over to 88cupsoftea.com/Scrivener and enter promo code 88cupsoftea at the checkout page for a 20% off discount. Thank you, storytellers, for tuning into my 6th episode. I am so thankful for your support and I've been loving all of your awesome feedback. I so appreciate your mentions, posts, and reviews. They really make my day. Last but not least, please let me know what you thought about Juliet's episode by heading over to Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram and find me at 88 Cups of Tea. Hey guys, it's me again. Thanks so much for listening in on 88 Cups of Tea. Go create something magical today and I'll catch you in the next episode. Bye.